You say you did it. I say you didn't. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. I say you got lucky. You say I didn't try. So you say it all worked. I say not for me. You say I didn't try. I say you just don't see why. You say I didn't try. I ask, can't you cry? You ask, why should I? I ask as I sigh, why can't you see it? If we exist as I, too few will make it if we are only I. Folks, that's the whole question in life is how much do we care about others and how much do we sacrifice a little bit to make our world a better place? We're going to talk about all kinds of issues on this show. This is the Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, and I'm your host, Alan Jennings. This is a challenging world, my friends. For 40 years, incomes have lagged behind inflation. There's an income gap. There's a wealth gap. What the hell? There's an education gap. There's an opportunity gap, a gap in how much of a difference we think government can make. There's a courage gap, a gender gap, a racial and ethnic justice gap. There's also a credibility gap. We've got massive disinformation campaign that goes on out there that's convincing people that things that are the facts and the truth aren't in fact the truth. And some made-up story is now the truth. You can scorn liberalism, but they're the folks who brought you clean air and clean water laws, protected the bald eagle, created the public education system. They gave us unions, the minimum wage, consumer protections, most national holidays, Medicare, Social Security, unemployment compensation, family medical leave, the 40-hour work week, and on. The other side fought every single one of those initiatives, but somehow finds a way to get you to vote against your own self-interest. Okay, so I'm Debbie Downer. I'm also Alan Jennings. I'm the executive director of the Community Action Committee in Lehigh Valley. By day, by night, by weekend, and for my entire life, 39 years of this. And I'm fortunate enough to get the opportunity to host WDIY's Lehigh Valley Discourse once a month. You know, we don't give our society, its nonprofit sector and government, the resources they need. Then when they struggle, our detractors say, see, they aren't effective, undermining the very underpinnings of our civil society. You know, if you render our institutions useless or minimally effective, you are going to convince people that government doesn't work. And I think that's part of the point, because people don't want to pay for that. Frankly, folks, I wish we had more voices. Sometimes I feel like I'm the only voice for economic justice. Then again, these times are so trying that I hope I'm having some kind of bad flashback. And I'm the crazy one, just a big, ugly figment of my imagination. The world is just fine. I'd be the one to be willing to be the only crazy person in the world if, in fact, that was the case. But the reality is that our world isn't working like it used to. So if my alarm at our world, at how our world is devolving, puts me on the dark side, Marcy Lesko isn't far behind. Marcy is the executive vice president of Your United Way. Marcy, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Marcy struggles with these issues like I do, and this community is better off because of it. Marcy, you've got a change agent style about you.
Yep.
What's up with that?
You know, a lot of people have asked me through the years where this comes from, and I think it comes from my mother. I was born and raised in Ohio in a small town, and my mom's main mission in life was to make sure that no one was left behind, ever. She always wanted to make sure everybody was included, and I think that's where it started. I think once I got exposed to a number of things and left small town America and moved to larger cities and, you know, and had the chance to get exposed to a lot of other things, I realized how many injustices there are and the opportunity to do something about it.
Empathy. Why do some people have it and some people don't? Have you ever thought about that? I mean, for me, somebody else's pain is my pain. My mother drilled the golden rule into my head. Not the, you know, those who have the gold make the rules, but the you know, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And I take that to its logical extreme. Essentially, your suffering becomes my suffering, and I'll be damned if I'm going to suffer, so I'm going to block your suffering. I got that from my mother.
She was very class conscious. She didn't go to college. She barely made it through high school, but she had this really genuine sort of class consciousness. Does your mother's agenda or her history, does that come from a class consciousness too? Is she?
I think so. She worked three jobs. She was a single mother. She worked three jobs. She had a job during the day, one in the evening, and then she was a seamstress on the side. And so she did a number of different things to try to figure out how to get things for us. She had a kind of a survival mentality of things. You know, I'm not sure about what creates empathy in people and what doesn't. I think some of it is modeling, you know, just having a parent or a family member or a caring adult that models for you, caring about things bigger than yourself. Some of it is a lived experience, having been there, done that, and experiencing it yourself. You can kind of put yourself in other people's shoes. I often say with our work, I think there's two things that I, you know, constantly sort of lean on. And one is the moral imperative, that it's the right thing to do. And the other is the economic imperative. It's the right thing to do because it has an impact on you economically. So I think that for me, that's where some of the that's where some of this work drives from.
So how did you when you, I mean, I'm assuming you grew up in the same place in that little town, and you probably went away to college?
I did.
Okay, where did you go?
Kent State University.
No way.
One of the most liberal colleges in Ohio, and I came from a fairly small conservative village in Ohio. And my graduating class had 66 people in it. I was the president of my class, and I arrived at Kent State, and Psych 101 had 500 people in it. I'd never seen that many people. I met my first Jewish person my freshman year of high school. I'd never met anyone who was Jewish. So,
hey,
you know,
or
freshman year of
college.
And
I'm in a similar situation. Yeah.
Yeah, total culture shock for me.
Yeah. Well, just out of curiosity, because this is off the track, but how much was the shootings of, what was it, 1970 kind of stuck in front of you as a legacy issue for Kent State? Was that something that you couldn't go to Kent State and not be fully aware of?
Yeah, so my freshman year, I became a tour guide on campus for other students. And we used to take, everyone wanted to go to the field and see where it occurred, where the clash between the students and the National Guard occurred. And they had planted one daffodil for every person that died in Vietnam. And so there was
50,000.
Yep. And so the entire field was covered.
Wow.
And every May 4th, not only was class dismissed for that day, but you were encouraged to go and be a part of reflection. So hundreds of people would come from all over the country and come there and be in the field that day. So
over there sits Neil Heaver, who is one of the most important people to the history of WDIY. This is the 25th anniversary of WDIY. But, Neil, this would have been a good place to insert a Neil Young song. We could be playing Four Dead in Ohio.
Yeah.
And it's one of those songs that you can't help be angry listening to.
Yeah.
So, United Way. You know, I've had this sort of love-hate relationship with United Way over the years. You know, I appreciated what they do, which is, you know, try to raise money to make a difference in our community. But it never spoke up. It did the nice stuff. It raised money, and it gave money away. Very nice, very important things to do. But, you know, I wrote a book recently that was published. It's called The Pursuit of Fairness. And in it, I said that if you're a nonprofit and you're not doing advocacy, you're not doing your job. So, you know, the United Way always said to me, we don't do advocacy. That's changed, hasn't it?
It has. It has.
It has something to do with Marcy Lesko?
I wish I could take the credit for that, but you know, I've heard you say the love-hate thing many times over the years, and I'm trying to continue to tip the scale toward the love.
Oh, you're there.
It's a love-love relationship.
I'm with you guys. You
know, it was about 10 years ago that our network started wading into the field of public policy.
So not just United Way, Lehigh Valley, but United Way started.
Our national network started introducing it.
Oh, good.
And our United Way started down the path. We were, for a long time, you know, very neutral, very sort of don't make waves on either side. But we convened a public policy committee that is comprised of both Republicans and Democrats, and the opportunity to sort of say, how do we advance policy issues at the local, state, and national level that support our goals and support our community? And so we've even gone so far, it's not just a kind of a nice-to-have sort of thing, but have explored what lobbying means. And because we're asking people to vote on specific bills. And so pieces of legislation that can advance our work, like full service community schools. Those things are good for, they're good for everybody. So, yeah, we stepped into the public policy realm, and it's continued to increase.
Now, I mean, this is probably the place where people get into the question of advocacy and whether it's allowed to be done. Now, advocacy is by definition nothing more than one person speaking on behalf of another.
Right.
Advocacy is not lobbying. Advocacy is not legislation. It's not partisan politics. Advocacy is essentially community problem solving.
Yeah.
I consider when we put together Estamos Listos, for example, which was the community-wide campaign to welcome Puerto Ricans fleeing the hurricane, as advocacy. I was pulling people in the community together, identifying a challenge, a problem the community faces, pulling people together and the resources necessary, and trying to make something make something better. There's nothing wrong with that, and it's an absolutely fundamental part of what we do. And in fact, in many respects, that's what your entire work at United Way is it not? I mean, you've got constant effort to pull people together and tackle community problems.
Yeah, I think that's the, you know, when people ask how has United Way shifted and changed over the years, 15 years ago, we were a fund collector and a resource allocator, 15, 20 years ago. Today, we're a fundraiser, which requires a different set of skills, and a community builder. So we're no longer just allocating resources. Grant making is and will forever be a part of who we are as an organization, but so much more of our effort is now into addressing and tackling systems change, you know, going after the issues that hold the problems in place. And so advocacy and convening and bringing people around a table to solve problems is
team building,
exactly,
coalition building.
It's community mobilization, movement
you guys,
building.
What's the latest buzz phrase? What impact?
Collective impact.
Collective impact, yep. Right? That's kind of the hip new phrase for coalition building or community problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys are pushing that in a big way. You've got us doing food policy council.
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, that movement building is a totally different approach than many United Ways have done. We've been a bit more passive in the past. You know, we bring people together and we collect those resources and then we redistribute them, as opposed to taking a far more proactive and assertive approach to community building.
Well, and, you know, from my perspective, we could run the best food bank in the country. And you know, CCLV runs the Second Harvest Food Bank. We could run the best in the country. But Congress, in the course of 5 minutes, could wipe out our best effort.
That's
by
right.
Cutting child nutrition programs,
yep.
SNAP benefits, and so on. So that's why I would argue that if you're not doing public policy advocacy, you're not doing your job.
Yep.
So that leads to the question of whether nonprofits are allowed to, quote, lobby.
Yep.
Lobbying is very different from advocacy in the sense that it is dealing with specific legislative proposals. People think that nonprofits aren't allowed to do lobbying. It's simply not true.
Yeah, that's right. We had to do some research about what was appropriate and to have really thoughtful conversation with our board. Is this a realm that we want to start waiting, you know, to start, you know, stepping into and being a part of? And the answer was yes. You cannot advance goals without policy.
Right.
And it's certainly harder given the polarities that exist in our country right now. But we have to get there. We have to. That's where the rubber hits the road, is policy.
And it is legal for nonprofits to do that.
It is.
The law allows for up to 20% of a nonprofit organization's budget to be used for lobbying.
Mm.
And interestingly, lobbying is not not just going to your legislator and trying to get him or her to introduce legislation or to pass legislation. It is simply informing the legislator of the issues that take place in your community. That's considered, quote, education.
That's right.
And that doesn't count as lobbying. So minimum wage. We think the minimum wage should go to $15 an hour. We can go to Susan Wild and say, Susan, we need to, or Congresswoman, we need an increase in minimum wage. We can say, you know, 30% of the people in your congressional district will benefit from that increase. We can say that X number of homeless people are employed, and therefore, if they are homeless and they've got a job, they obviously aren't getting paid enough. But it is not until we say, Congresswoman, House Bill 127 is going to raise the minimum wage to the limit that we think is appropriate. We need you to support that bill, or we need you to co-sponsor that bill. That is lobbying. Mm. So all the work you do up to the point of asking that member to take specific legislative action, it's not considered lobbying. So despite what a lot of people believe, that lobbying is prohibited for nonprofits, it simply is not true.
I would simply add that I think that education piece that you're talking about is equally, if not more important than the ask, right? So part of our job as leaders in this community, as citizens of the Lehigh Valley, is to educate folks about all of the preconditions that lead up to that ask. So, for example, you know, and we've talked about this briefly, we've started introducing and participating in something called ALICE, Asset Limited Income Constrained Employed.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's a term that describes people that are living paycheck to paycheck. And what that does is it opens up a new category of what people consider people in need. They often think of people that live below the federal poverty line. But everybody knows, well, everybody in my world knows, I suppose, and those who want to know it or don't want to know it, knows that there is a segment of the population that these are folks that are not on a variety of federally qualified benefits. These are folks that are living paycheck to paycheck that are in need in our community. It's just not enough money. And in fact, what the ALICE data is telling us, it's about 1 in 3 in the Lehigh Valley of folks that are living paycheck to paycheck. And some parts of our community, it's even higher. One community up in one of the counties we serve up in Carbon County is as high as 70%. That are living paycheck to paycheck. And so helping people to understand that classification of folks in our community, and then more importantly, so what do we do about it? How do we have policies and strategies that can affect and help people? Alice, for example, we know affordable childcare is one of those things. Public transportation, a livable wage, you know, those
affordable
kinds
housing.
Of things. Affordable housing. Being able to access resources that their family might need, like through 211. So when we talk about, you know, how we educate our policymakers and folks who represent us, I think it's not a we're showing up at your doorstep and we're here to tell you about a thing we need you to vote for. It is a long conversation about here's what we're hearing, here's what we're seeing, this is what the data is telling us about what's happening in our community, and we need you to join us and do something about it from your perspective.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm your host. I'm Alan Jennings. I get to do this about once a month and love every minute of it, especially when I have guests like Marcy Lesko on with me, who is the Executive Vice President. It's a pretty cool title, by the way, of the United Way of the Greater Lehigh Valley, your United Way. And we've got lots more to talk about. We're going to take a quick break and hope you see you on the other side.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guest this evening is Marcy Lesko from the United Way. We're talking about issues. Most people think of the United Way as exclusively about raising money and bugging you in your workplace to, you know, to make a contribution. It is that, but it is also a community problem solver and a good one. And I'm glad that they're on my side of this discussion. I used to brag on them because they weren't doing advocacy. That's changed. And Marcy's pretty doggone good at it. Part of the issue is, you know, the ignorance of voters. We talked about the minimum wage and people living paycheck to paycheck. There are so few people still on cash assistance that, it really isn't. I mean, just some basic data. There are 630,000 people in the Lehigh Valley. Something like 2,500 or 3,000 are on temporary assistance for needy families, meaning they're able-bodied, but they are collecting cash assistance. Not people who are on disability, but people who are on temporary assistance for needy families. The monthly payment, the monthly check that a family of three on cash assistance will receive, do you know what the number is?
It's minimal.
$403 a month.
Yeah.
When I ask people in the audiences, you know, what do you think the number is? They'll say $800, $1,000,
$2,000.
Yeah. I ask them how many they think are on welfare. They'll say 30%, which just blows me away. Mm. They don't know that the last time TANF payments were increased was January of 1985. It's been 35 years since people on cash assistance got a, quote, raise on their welfare. And they think family size is like five people per family when, in fact, it's 2.1. Not 2.1 kids, 2.1 people. And yet we spend so much time, you know, arguing over whether, you know, we have too big of a welfare state. So this gets back to the public policy agenda. You know, 30% of the families who enter the Sixth Street shelter homeless are headed by a working adult.
That's right.
So, you know, they go to a job and they come home to a homeless shelter. Mm. There's something desperately wrong with that. And that's where we get to the minimum wage. So the United Way has a stock list of activities that are your priorities.
Yep.
And you have been very deliberate about the messaging and making sure that people are real clear on what you're all about. And I've been pretty impressed by it. Here's an opportunity for you to do that again. Tell us about United Way's agenda as we speak.
Yeah, so we shifted a few years ago from funding organizations and agencies to funding specific programs. And after we made that shift, what we realized was even though that was helpful, we weren't really making significant impact over time. So the shift then was made to a long game on four very specific investment areas, three of the measurable goals, and then one area just kind of preserving that area. So the board made an intentional commitment to shift away from emergency services, and not because emergency services aren't critical. I mean, we partnered together for the fire that happened in Allentown.
Right.
So we are always and will always be available and ready to service the community bucket when it is needed. That is what we're here for. We're long-term solutions and short-term crisis. We're here for you. But we could put all of the resources that we raise into emergency services and crisis work, and it would never be enough. You know, things around...
It's a black hole.
Addiction treatment or things around childhood. Any one of those things could take the entire check. So we needed to think very strategically about how we invest donor resources into really getting at the root cause of things that affect our community. So our board made the decision to focus on three specific goals. First one is in education. 80% of all of the resources that are raised at United Way go into our education work. We know that the biggest predictor for whether a child will graduate from high school is whether they can read at the end of third grade. And so that birth to third grade, end of third grade pipeline is the most critical time period in a person's life. So putting our eggs in that basket was really important for us.
And now when you say putting the eggs in that basket, you're not saying you're funding public education.
No.
You're doing education, which is, what does that mean?
Right. So we are we are funding programs and services and strategies that wrap around our public education partners. So we have
that complement
them. Yeah. Yep, that work hand in glove with them. So summer learning, trauma-informed care, attendance, chronic absenteeism. We're funding things around grade level reading, early literacy programs, you know, a variety of things like after school, you know, those things that we know can make a critical difference in kiddos and families' lives. So we have an entire movement in this community called Lehigh Valley Reads. Just driving in this morning, and I saw one of our billboards up on the Million Minute Challenge.
That's cool.
In March. You know, I said to my son, look at that. There's our work right there. And we're encouraging people to read. So having a literacy-rich community benefits our kids. So education is our top priority. Our second priority is in healthy aging. Pennsylvania is one of the largest older adult populations in the country. And so in the morning call called it a silver tsunami a few years back as the boomers are aging. We need to find a way to keep people healthy and in their homes longer. If you go into institutionalized care, my sister is the head of nursing at a small, nice nursing home, home care facility, whatever they're called now. She is the head of nursing there. And I was asking her what it costs out of pocket for someone to be there. I was stunned. I was absolutely stunned. You're looking at $3,000 to $5,000 out of pocket at a nice place, a mid-sized nice place. If you're going to go even higher, you're looking at, if you need skilled nursing, $15,000 or more dollars out of pocket per month.
Yeah.
You'll bankrupt an entire family. So if we can keep people healthy in their homes longer and have an age-friendly community, it benefits every one of us. So there's back to my earlier comment, not only the moral imperative, but the economic imperative.
Right.
Our third area of focus is food access. And to your point, we could have every food bank in the world. We can do soup can drives all day long, but it is not going to address financial self-sufficiency and the ability to put fresh, affordable food on your own family's table on a regular basis.
I characterize this one as, charity is what you do when society doesn't have justice. We are interested in justice.
Yeah.
However, we run the Second Harvest Food Bank. And
That's right.
What I think people need to understand is that hunger no longer is an episodic rarity. Hunger, and I don't like the term hunger because people, kids don't have swollen bellies because they're not eating in the Lehigh Valley. Hunger is the lack of security knowledge that you're going to be able to get your next, where your next meal is coming from.
That's right.
So what we've got now is, people used to think of it as, the Emergency Food and Shelter Program, which is a FEMA program, because in Congress in 1982 thought that hunger and homelessness were like this temporary emergency. It has been going on ever since, right? So what's going on now is that people the food pantry network has essentially become an income maintenance program.
Right.
That we encourage people, if you can't pay your bills, don't buy food, save money on your food, go to a local food pantry.
That's right.
And save your money to pay your rent because there isn't enough assistance for housing. So people need to understand the food pantry system has become an income maintenance program as if it were cash assistance, as if it were welfare.
Yep.
Need to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Charity is food assistance from a food bank. Justice is a job that pays the bills, right?
That's right.
Charity is a homeless shelter. Justice is an affordable place to live. And, I would argue that we should be working on the latter.
Just to that point, I'll just share. Our fourth area is emergency services, and I'll talk about that in a second because it ties in really nicely here. Those emergency food, emergency shelter, emergency, things for disaster relief. We have so many families and so many folks that are one or two disasters or emergencies away from needing to check out the shelter.
For that matter, it's a health problem.
Yes, it is. But I think the when we were looking at the ALICE data, this was stunning to us. For a family of four to just survive in the Lehigh Valley, just survive, $64,000 a year.
Yeah.
For the family to feel like they're not comfortable, but that they are able to just make it, to breathe $99,000 a year for a family.
Keep in mind that we only pay $403 a month for a family of three on welfare. You know?
So when we say we're looking at, you know, the monthly total of what a family would need, you're looking at $5,600.
Yeah.
And you slice that out with transportation and housing and childcare and a number of other things, it's just not enough.
And if they have any significant health issues, it's going to be more, obviously.
Absolutely. Yep.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I am your host tonight. I'm Alan Jennings from the Community Action Committee of Lehigh Valley. My guest is the inimitable Marcy Lesko, Executive Vice President of Your United Way. Okay, so you got the, what about emergency services? Did you explain that one yet? So we covered
Are
all.
We still on?
Yeah.
Okay. yeah, so emergency services is just exactly what I was talking about. So those are the four things: education, healthy aging, food access, emergency services. And that's really what we've stood for the last 6 years, and we'll continue for the next two. And so we're making, I think it's important for people to know, we're not changing our funding decisions or our community building decisions every year or every 2 years. This is an 8-year commitment. And many United Ways are even shifting to even longer. They're looking at 1- and 2- generation level approaches to things.
How did you come to those four choices?
Yeah. So it's a couple different things. We live at the intersection because of the unique role that we play in our community and the unique position that we're in. We have to raise every single dollar that we spend in the community. So we live at the intersection between true community need and donor interest.
And this year you raised $16 million. What did you call it?
Yeah. So last year we raised a little over $16 million. This year, our campaign's creeping up over $17 million.
Congratulations.
We'll be announcing that big number in April. We have been unbelievably blessed with incredible leadership. So the Spences, the Schaffers, the Malloys.
Rileys.
The Rileys are coming up this year. We have had so many folks who are really deeply committed to helping us to achieve that goal.
Okay, so is there anything you guys missed that you regret? I mean, you know, those four topical areas are, you know, that's pretty broad swath, but there's lots of other stuff. Is there anything you're wishing you had included, or have things changed enough that you should be looking at adding something?
Yeah, I think what's continuing to evolve, the ALICE work, I think has really bubbled up our need to be considering what our role is in helping families that are living paycheck to paycheck. And we're right now considering what that might look like for our 2022 cycle. So whether it's joining some of the other giants in this community around workforce development, I mean, we have incredible WIB and others, so we don't want to duplicate what others are doing. How do we join alongside folks who are unemployed and underemployed in our community? How do we look at you know, other things that are very specifically designed for ALICE families. But I would say, I don't think we have any regrets, but I would tell you that there are a couple of issues that I wish we had more bandwidth and capacity to join. The opioid crisis is just stunning, and I wish that we had more opportunity to join in some of that. I have personally seen some of the effects of that and the impact of that and what that's doing to our communities, not just here, but across a country. And that's a personal level. I wish we had more opportunity to join that because I think it's affecting so many things. We do some work up in Carbon County, and I know talking with some of my colleagues up there, you know, really there's an emphasis on, you know, how do we get our arms around this. The other is criminal justice reform. And some of the, you know, I think that connects directly to the work we've been doing regarding race and racial justice in our community. So I think criminal justice reform, human trafficking.
Do you see yourselves adding any of those items? Or?
Well, what we've been doing, I don't know that they'll become, certainly the areas around, as we're talking with ALICE, for sure. The other areas, what we've been doing is if we don't have it directly as a funding priority, we will walk alongside and build partnership and leadership within that sector. So people that are wanting to tackle opioid crisis or suicide or criminal justice or other areas, we can't maybe specifically free up resources for that, but what we can do are help those that are helping those. So we do capacity building, leadership development, provide some infusion, maybe some small mini grants, you know, seed money. We'll do matches. We'll do a variety of different things so that we can help those folks that are leading in those areas. We can't lead in every single area. So we offer a way to walk alongside without directly working with it.
You know, I don't think you were there when you set those four.
I was.
You were?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because I would have argued with, and nobody over there in the United Way asked me, but if I would have argued with the seniors' point. Because, I mean, historically, seniors are the most affluent age cohort in America, largely because they vote. And nobody's going to take their Social Security away from them. That's a third rail in American politics. Now we're not only protecting Medicare for all, we want to not only are we protecting Medicare for elderly, we're now proposing that it be for everyone.
Yeah.
So, you know, the elderly stuff sort of felt to me like it was an opportunity it was like a popular thing, not necessarily an issue that demanded the same kind of attention that those other three did.
Yeah.
Would you take me to task for that position, or do you think what's your reaction to that?
I'm going to take you to task on it. I want your listeners to ask you and for you to ask yourself how many folks are caring for their mom or dad and how many folks. So
good point.
Probably, yeah, we've got a lot of folks that, that are dealing with the effects of they're taking care of their kids and now they're taking care of mom or dad, or mom or dad just need a little extra help, or aunt or uncle or a family member or neighbor. And so, and the economic impact, you know, you have folks that are caring for their parent or their family member that are missing work. And we're talking about the Alice families that are living paycheck to paycheck and can't afford to call off on a day when they're only being paid hourly. And what we know in the Lehigh Valley is that there are 32,000 seniors that need help every day here in our community. So I would take you to task on it. I think it's a real issue. I think it affects people. And every time we go out front on we are raising money, the education piece, it speaks to a lot of people. But when you peel it back a little bit and talk to the folks that are dealing with the impact of having to do caregiving, it's pretty significant.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I am your host this evening. I am Alan Jennings, and my guest is Marcy Lesko, the Executive Vice President of the United Way and a pretty consequential decision maker in the Lehigh Valley, especially through the United Way of the Greater Lehigh Valley. Stick with us. We're going to take a quick break. There's still plenty to talk about. Join us after the break.
Not only is becoming a WDIY member a great way to support the programs you love, it has its benefits. WDIY members have access to our weekly member ticket giveaway emails, discover great concerts, theater performances, film screenings, and more, all while supporting the many choices and real voices on WDIY. Make your gift today at 610-694-8100, extension 7, or wdiy.org. Thank you.
I'm Alan Jennings. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host. My guest this evening is Marcy Lesko, the Executive Vice President of the United Way of the Greater Lehigh Valley. And Dave Lewis, if you're listening, I would have to say that Marcy Lesko is the one who does the real work at United Way.
Don't say that. No.
Well, Dave's a friend. Hi, Dave. I'm sure he's listening. Okay, so
I need to make sure you understand. We are an incredible team.
So, I know you are.
Yeah, we are an incredible team.
I love you all.
Yeah, we can't do the work without each other.
I wouldn't have said that if I wasn't teasing my friend Dave. How do you think we're doing as a community? I mean, if you were, you know, to stand back and take a look, not just, you know, as the United Way, are we doing the right thing at United Way, but as a community, how do you think we're doing?
You know, the word that keeps coming into my mind is better. And maybe that's just the optimist in me, but I see more folks that are really digging in and really interested in community problem solving and the next generation of leadership that's starting to grow here. And it's really exciting to see. You know, it's really funny. I'm now in that position. I've been at United Way 14 years and Human Services for over 20 now, and which is just a young pup to, you know, people like yourself, Alan, and others who've been at it for 40
I'm
years.
I'm only 38, you know.
You've had a hard life. So, again, I think it's a young pup compared to some who've been at it for 40 or more years. But I've now reached the place where some of my own ideas are coming back to me.
Yeah.
And some of the work that the seeds that I planted or the work that I did years ago, people are now telling me, you ought to hear about this. And it's really funny, you know, when that is happening more and more, I'm finding it to be, when people are sort of like, oh, you should hear about this thing that we're doing at XYZ in the community, this new, you know, endeavor, or this thing's been around for a while, you should see XYZ. And sort of like, wow, I can't believe that I was part of creating that. And it's now coming back to me as this thing. Someone said to me recently, Hassan Batts, you should meet Dr. Hassan Batts. And I said, I hired him. You know,
we're talking about a guest twice on my show, Promise Neighborhoods of Lehigh Valley, does terrific work.
And he's incredible. So we turned him down for the job the first time and then hired him the second. And
well, he got better.
He got better. He's incredible. A dear close friend. So I think the community's better. I think we certainly, the complexity of the social issues that we're up against is not better. It seems like, I think for many families, and it's easy for me to say it feels better, but I'm not in the shoes of someone that's living paycheck to paycheck. I'm not in the shoes of someone that's, I'd be curious to hear what they think, if it's better. Because I think in some parts of our community, it sure doesn't feel better. But from my perspective, how are we doing as a community and a group of folks that are trying to do what we can? I think it's better.
What do you think we do well as a community?
You know, I've been in the Lehigh Valley for 16 years now, and what continues to strike me is just how many top of the class things that we do here. So we will find our way to become the best chamber in the country. We will find our way to become the best music festival in the country. We'll find a way to become the best United Way, the best CACO. I mean, just pick one. We are really committed to, we're very competitive. And there's a lot of folks who really give a damn about this community and I think really kind of carry their team name, whether it's their city name. I carry Allentown on my back, or I carry Easton, you know, on the back of my jacket. I'm Team Allentown, I'm Team Easton, or there's a lot of folks that are Team Lehigh Valley, and that's evident everywhere you go. People are so protective of this community, and take it personally when things are not going well.
I think we have a pretty amazing business community, believe it or not. I mean, I pick on people in power, and certainly people in leadership positions of companies are people in power. But I think the Lehigh Valley, now, I mean, they're still mostly, you know, Republicans and conservatives, but their perspective is still, I mean, where they differ with, I think, you and me is that they think the problems should be solved at the local level instead of at the federal level.
Right.
But I think there's a lot of enlightened, progressive leadership in the Lehigh Valley business community. The Bill Spences at PPL, the David Schaffer and Ross Bournes at Just Born, the Chris Martins at Martin Guitar, the Richard Masters at MCS Industries. I mean, it's just a lot of really good, their products has tons of great leadership. I think, you know, even though I pick on, you know, those with resources, I think they're doing a pretty good job. Banks, I think, are doing an outstanding job meeting their obligations under the Community Reinvestment Act. I think there's an important issue for us. I think that's has a lot to do with why we've got our act together in Lehigh Valley. I think the leadership and the business community has pushed the whole issue of regionalism over the years, which I think has been really an important part of why the Lehigh Valley works. You know, you go up to Scranton or Wilkes-Barre, the nonprofit sector up there, they barely even know each other, much less talk to each other, much less work together. Down here, the nonprofit sector, I think, is pretty collaborative. Do you agree?
Totally. I think, all of those companies that you named, and, you know, places like Victaulic and Crayola and others, Just Born, and
all of Lehigh Valley,
you know, St. Luke's, I mean, you know, pick one.
Capital Blue Cross, IMARC
City
Blue
Center
Cross.
Allentown. I think they really put their money where their mouth is. They're really and sincerely committed to this community. We see it because they show up and really and sincerely listen. How can we be helpful? What can we do? I think when you ask, you know, the pulse on what people think about this community, I ask all the time, especially new leaders and emerging leaders, collaborative is the word that comes up over and over and over again. And I don't think that's by accident. Yeah. I think we and others have intentionally been building collaboration for a long time.
I've often said that I am cynical enough to know what I'm up against, but optimistic enough to pick the fight anyway. And, you know, I think this community is pretty good at responding to its issues. I think it's pretty good at being challenged. I think if there is one thing I'm proud of in my career of not making it anywhere near the difference that I had hoped to make in my life, is that the you know, the Lehigh Valley is a place that wants to address its issues.
Yeah.
And what I'm proudest of is that I've challenged this community, sometimes pretty aggressively, sometimes controversially, and yet people in leadership positions continue to support us and encourage us to stand up and speak out. And I give the people in power in Lehigh Valley a lot of credit for taking that approach.
Agreed.
And frankly, I think that our controversial work has helped us raise money. I think a lot of people in the nonprofit sector are afraid to do things that require a little bit of courage because they're afraid they're going to lose donors. My experience is quite the opposite. We don't lose donors because we're controversial. We get donors because we're controversial. Mm. What do you think the Lehigh Valley isn't doing so well?
I it's in my nature to always be thinking about the things we could be doing better. So I think it's a balancing act of acknowledging the good work and then thinking about where can we tighten it up? What else can we do? I think we're still a white space in our community. And I think we have a lot of work to do in this area. And it's not for lack of folks who want to do better. I think there are a lot of folks, I'm hearing so many conversations about folks who want to do better and are looking for opportunities on how to do better. They want to know very specifically.
About race. Right.
And about other issues related to marginalized communities. So issues related to LGBT folks in the community. They want to do better. They're looking for specific, what do you want me to do? Specific tools.
I think the divisiveness that Donald Trump has spawned has actually resulted in a pushback in a lot of ways. I think even people who embrace Donald Trump want us to be more inclusive. They want us to be, to respect our diversity. And, you know, the fact that we could do this Color Outside the Lines initiative where we're working, and you're an active part of this, working on a comprehensive strategic plan to improve the quality of life for people of color, is a tribute to this community that we could put something like that together.
Yeah, there's a vulnerability and a dropping of the armor to have hard conversations, and having been, you know, sitting at tables 13, 14, 10, 5 years ago, trying to participate in some of those conversations, the energy feels different.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure exactly what, I have lots of ideas about what's caused that, but the energy certainly is beginning to feel different to me. And I say that as a woman with white skin identity that is in a position of influence. And so I would be curious to feel if others feel like the energy is different.
Well, you know, the frustration for me is that there are a lot of people in Lehigh Valley whose attitude is, hey, I don't own any slaves. Why are you blaming me? They really don't understand, nor do they want to understand, the problem of, you know, what it means to be black in the Lehigh Valley or what it means to be Latino in the Lehigh Valley. And, you know, my hope is that employers are going to make it very clear to their employees, if you have that kind of an attitude, you're not going to go very far in this operation, because this operation needs its diversity. It needs to be able to relate to people in other markets who speak different languages and look different from the status quo.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that's I think there's better days coming.
Yeah. I think there's certainly a lot of conversation about at every level in workplaces, in the nonprofit sector, in the public sector, you know, in a variety of different places where folks are beginning to be less afraid of the conversation.
Yeah.
I think that to me is the most important part. We need to get off of the blame and shame, and getting caught up in that kind of conversation is I think there's a time and place for that conversation. But the work that we're trying to do in community building invites creative solutioning.
Yeah.
And to move away from getting caught up in some of the other pieces. But I feel that there's more courage to have conversation and more willingness and openness to have conversation than I've seen in the past. Yeah. I think we have more work to do.
I agree. I would also, when we're making a list of the problems this community isn't doing a real good job confronting, behavioral health, drug and alcohol addiction, mental illness. I think they are colossal problems. They are it's huge. I don't think people have a real understanding of how significant it is. How do you think the nonprofit sector is doing? You have a lot to do with whether nonprofits are good enough to get the funding that you guys generate.
Yeah.
How do you think the Lehigh Valley's nonprofit sector is doing?
I think they're solid. I think there's a lot of folks that are still in survival mode, that are still trying to, you know, we talk about Alice families or families that are, you know, if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that are just trying to figure out how they're going to make payroll and to figure out how to raise money and how to do social media. I think it becomes very difficult for some nonprofits to survive in today's sophistication. I think the best thing they can do is to not get caught up in mission creep and try to be all things to all people, to scale down and to be really effective at what they do. I think we could do for some more consolidation of resources.
Yes. There are just too many nonprofits.
We started the Lehigh Valley Synergy Fund with the Community Foundation a few years back, and I've had a handful of folks that have taken us up on that. But you know, which was designed to create affiliations and possible mergers between nonprofits. It's not our right or desire to force mergers, or it's not even our right to do that. But I think our entire community.
I agree with that. I mean, you have a stewardship obligation, right? I mean, you need to be able to tell your donors that we're using every dollar we get as efficiently and effectively as we can.
And I can confidently say that.
If you're a nonprofit with 4 employees or 3 employees, man, that's a tough thing to make an argument you're as efficient and as effective as you can be.
I was reading recently, someone was saying it's like the threshold is somewhere around 11 to 12 employees, because then you can start to segment out what people do. If you have under 11
and pay them
12,
appropriately,
then you're looking at, you know, everybody sort of is a jack of all trades, a master of none. And so it becomes very difficult to do what you do. I think I have seen, again, recently, I've seen a lot of folks who are stepping out in new ways. So again, it used to be in the past, you received your check from United Way, and that was your allocation of resources, and you did what you did with it. We have seen so many of our nonprofit partners step up and join the fight. I'm using that word, and I know you like that
word.
The fight around issues related to education and aging and food access in our community with their own resources. So beyond whatever allocation or investment they receive from us, they've stepped up with their own resources. So that tells me we have more folks that are thinking beyond themselves.
You know, that's interesting, because I'm not sure I see that. I would criticize my peers as not being particularly innovative and not being particularly agile or entrepreneurial.
Yeah. But I think we have a new generation of leadership that's coming up through the ranks.
Yeah.
And I've begun to see more and more folks, and not to be critical of my colleagues from that have been legacy leaders, you know, people that have been in that position for a long time. But I think being a nonprofit leader in today's world is not for the faint of heart. And so it's a hard job. It's hard work. And a position like ours is to figure out how we give you the tools and resources to be innovative. How can we give you the breathing space? Because part of the problem that a lot of our, I'm going to say something that might be a little controversial, which I know you love, but part of the problem is, as funders, we create the funder dance, and our nonprofit colleagues have to figure out which dance and which jig they have to do today.
Yeah.
And I think we would be better served if we created a system where they had the breathing space for innovation.
Yeah.
And so we've tried some different things. I see some of my funding colleagues that are trying some new and innovative things and recognizing that they may be part of the problem. So
we're going to run out of time, but let me just raise, you know, because I think I'd be irresponsible if I didn't. You've got COVID-19 out there.
Yeah.
Should you and we be thinking about whether this is an opportunity or a demand that we get the troops together and think through what this means? We're yeah. wrestling with it for hours already.
Yeah.
As an agency.
We were just looking at an article last week. You know, it's always the marginalized people from marginalized communities that get hit with these things the worst.
Yeah.
And so a responsibility of philanthropy is to figure out how we make sure the marginalized communities are taken care of. And not just the marginalized communities, but all communities. So I do think it is an opportunity for us to be thinking about what we can do about this. And not just to think about it, but to do something.
I worry about my own organization's relevance. I mean, when the sky is falling, you know, it's kind of hard to you know, argue you should send us a check, you know, because
yeah.
we don't do COVID-19. You know, I mean, we don't do,
that's right.
you know what I mean? I'm worried about the longer term effect on the nonprofit sector. People start saying, oh, that's not so important anymore. The survival of the species is, you know, that shiny object is yeah. you know.
I think we have to be careful of the scarcity mentality, though. We yeah. can't think it's this, therefore not this.
Yeah.
And so how do we make responsible, smart decisions that are well-informed with good data before we act and react? And so I think that's important.
You've been listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guest this evening has been Marcy Lesko, Executive Vice President for the United Way of the Greater Lehigh Valley. Marcy, thanks so much for joining me and for spending time educating the best radio listeners in Lehigh Valley.
They are the best radio listeners.
They're the smartest.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, as always.
Join us next time.